Welcome to Travelitch Radio, the show that lets you scratch your lust for travel from the friendly confines of your home. I'm Dan Schlossberg, along with my longtime friend and broadcast partner, Maggie Linton.
And this is the 283rd episode of Travelitch Radio. Every week at 8 p.m. East, we interview hoteliers, transportation executives, city, state, and national tourism officials, authors, writers, broadcasters, and others involved in the world of travel.
And our special guest tonight is Peter Armstrong, Senior Director of Museum Operations and Education at Jamestown Yorktown Foundation, which operates Jamestown Settlement and the American Revolution Museum at Yorktown. Welcome, Peter, to Travelitch Radio.
Thank you very much, and thank you for having me on.
And thank you for making the time to do this. First, Peter, tell our listeners exactly where your destinations are located.
Well, the name kind of gives away. So the Jamestown Settlement is located in Jamestown, Virginia, and the Yorktown American Revolution Museum at Yorktown is located in Yorktown, Virginia, about 20 miles apart, so right in the heart of the historic triangle here in Virginia.
Well, I know Jamestown was the first English settlement in 1607, long before the Pilgrims landed on Plymouth Rock. How did Captain James Smith and his crew survive in the unfamiliar new land?
Well, not particularly well, to be honest. When they first arrived, there was a lot of issues with both the weather, the land, the disease, and obviously the Indians as well. So really, they landed about now in May. That's when they landed. And by the first winter, there was 2/3 of them were already dead. So it was a pretty difficult survival here. But then again, the Pilgrims themselves didn't have an easy time. They also had a large number of casualties when they first got to the new land.
Well, what is the true story of Captain Smith and Pocahontas? We hear a lot about it.
That really depends on who you ask. the most exciting thing about the Captain Smith and Pocahontas story is that nobody really knows what the true story is. So I think that's the kind of interesting tale. You know, you hear from lots of different ways. There's obviously, the one that gets passed down is this story about how they have this kind of love affair, and she saves him from being killed. But, you know, John Smith, who records this in his own diaries about 20 years later, is pretty well known for kind of stretching the truth and making himself a bit of a hero. So we could have to take that with a bit of a pinch of salt. Then there's a story that maybe Pocahontas put a head on his head because it was a showing of power, and she was kind of showing how the Indians had power over the English. And then, of course, she was really, what's the most interesting thing about Pocahontas is that she's a real Indian girl. So many people have seen her image on the Disney and on the TV and lots of paintings about her in the Capitol. But you've got to kind of remember that she was a real Indian woman. Actually, called Matoka was her real name. And Pocahontas is a kind of a nickname that she was given.
What was her name again?
Matoka. She's had a number of names, but Matoka is one of the ones that's most well-known. And around here, when you come to Jamestown, you'll often see places called Matoka Avenue. There's actually a school as well called Matoka here in James City County.
Okay.
Well, Peter, is it true that the English settlers almost gave up and went home? What saved them?
Well, that's absolutely true. You know, when I tell you that nearly 2/3 died in the first winter, then you can understand it was very harsh conditions. In fact, it was about 50 years or so before more people were dying than arriving. You know, there was a point where for about 50 years where actually the population was going down. But the real story that most people know is the starving times. This was a period of time where the Indians had a pretty bad summer, so they couldn't share the corn with the English, and so the English ended up staying in the fort, and a lot of people dying, a lot of deaths were there. And they got to a point where ships were sent from England on a regular basis, and there's a credible story where the ship bound for England is caught in a hurricane and shipwrecked on Bermuda. And this is the period where the food was meant to be coming for them from the ship, so the people in Jamestown are really starving. But on the shipwreck in Bermuda, they managed to put together, from the wood that they find and the wood from the ships, two smaller ships, and they sail them to Jamestown. And on arrival, they find that everybody's dying, there's no food, and they realize that there's no hope for the colony. So they all get back on the ships, and they head up north in the hopes that they can find some food in the further fishing villages. And just as they're about to leave the Chesapeake Bay, they meet another ship, which is bound from England with Lord Delaware on it, where you get the name Delaware from. Lord Delaware's on that. He's got food, he's got supplies, he's got people. and really it's saved. So without that real coincidence where they're leaving through the Chesapeake Bay at the same time, the same day as Lord Delaware's arriving, then the colony would have been gone and America would be a very different place.
Wow. Well, to your knowledge, Peter, what was the world like in 1607 other than trying to starve to death?
Well, we've got to really understand that Jamestown is and the New World is a completely different place to the rest of the Europe, particularly in 1607. So the Spanish, the Portuguese, the Dutch, the British are sailing all over the world. You know, they're trading with China and India and very sophisticated societies going on, banking and finances and education. London's a bustling city. So really, looking at Jamestown and saying, you know, these poor people starving to death here in Jamestown isn't a real good reflection of what 1607 was like. It was a really sophisticated society by then.
Well, how did you celebrate America's 400th anniversary in 2007? Hard to believe it's been that long.
Yeah, so that's the reason why I'm at Jamestown, to be honest. Obviously, you can tell from my accent, I'm not originally from Virginia.
Oh, you're really?
Yeah, I know. I've tried to hide it well. I came across in 2007. I used to work in a museum in Britain, and I brought a suit of armor from James I to cross to here for a exhibition that they had and got to know people, and that's where I kind of made my connection with them for the 400th anniversary in 2007.
Cool. All right. So you were the newcomer in 2007.
That's right. Me and the Queen, although she didn't. I didn't travel with her.
Well, we're talking with Peter Armstrong of the Jamestown Yorktown Foundation. Dan?
Thanks, Maggie. What can visitors see at Jamestown Settlement today, Peter? I know there are replicas of the original ships.
Well, the way it works really for the Jamestown Settlement is that about a mile away from us is Jamestown Island, the historic. That's where the settlers actually arrived. But that's an archaeological dig. So that's where they're kind of looking at the fort and finding objects. So what we do at the settlement is take that history and turn it into a living history. So when you come to the settlement, you would have a museum gallery that you'd expect, you know, the sort of things you would see with objects in cases and films and movies and interactives, a really interactive museum. And then you go outside and you'll visit a Powhatan Indian village where we have reenactors and interpreters who will show you how the Powhatans lived. Then you go into an English fort, an exact replica of the fort that would have been here in 1607. And then you can make your way down to the pier where there were three full-size replica ships that sail that were the size of the original ships that came here, the Susan Constant, the Godspeed, and the Discovery. So you can spend a good hour inside the galleries and maybe 2 hours outside at the same time.
Well, let's talk about Yorktown, too. It's best known as the place the colonial army defeated British General Cornwallis, ending the Revolutionary War. Didn't you open a new Revolutionary War museum last year?
Yeah, well, I'm glad you mentioned the British were defeated at Yorktown. I know how you get that in. We opened a new museum. There was a visitor center there, and it had been for a while, but that visitor center kind of introduced people to the Battle of Yorktown and the battlefield itself. But we really wanted to build a museum that talked about the whole of the Revolutionary War. So that opened in April of last year. It's only been open about a year now, doing phenomenally well. And it's a brand new museum, a $50 million museum, so it's not small. And it kind of replicas Jamestown. So you can go around the galleries, see some films, including a really good interactive immersive film when you're right in the heart of the Siege of Yorktown, and then you can go outside and meet the soldiers from the Continental Army and see a farm that would have been from that period of time as well, with the crops growing, the chickens, and the people working on that farm. So again, a real living history area and the galleries as well.
Well, how does your museum differ from the Museum of the American Revolution in Philadelphia?
Well, they don't have the living history. So they're right in the heart of Philadelphia. So it's a museum, and it's got a fantastic collection, but it's a museum as traditionally you would expect. It's in a building, and you walk around the building, and you leave the museum. But ours has a living history area where you can go outside. So you may be able to look at a cannon in the Philadelphia Museum from the period, but in our museum you can hear it being fired, and you can see the actors and the interpreters setting up that cannon in costume, and you can talk to them, and it's a little bit more, I think, interactive on the outside area than the Philadelphia Museum. But the Philadelphia Museum has got a fantastic collection as well of objects. So I think with the galleries that we're kind of similar, but the difference is that we have the outside area. And you know, we're right in the heart of the Battle of Yorktown. So you can see from our front porch of the museum the battlefield itself.
Well, speaking of the battlefield, can visitors actually walk on the battlefield? Are there tour guides or what?
Yeah, the battlefield's operated by the National Park Service. So it's a smaller museum that they have there, and then you can go on the battlefield itself. And you can, they have got guides that will take you around and show you the famous redoubts, Redoubt 9, which was famously taken by Alexander Hamilton, who no one had heard about 5 years ago, but now everybody knows the musical. And you can see and you can hear the stories of that. And you can go to a place that I don't like to go to, which is called Surrender Field, where the English surrendered to the Americans in 1781.
Well, I love history, Peter, and Jamestown and Yorktown are two-thirds of America's historic triangle, along with Colonial Williamsburg. To get a good taste of all three, how much time should out-of-town visitors allow?
Well, that depends on how much. If you love history, you could be there for a long time. But Williamsburg itself was at least a day visit, if not 2 days. It's a huge site. It's the largest reenacting living history site in America. So, you know, you've got streets filled with horses and carriages and soldiers, and, you know, to go into they've got a small farm. They've got everything you can imagine to wander through those streets. And then that's about 5 miles or so from Jamestown, and then 15 miles from Yorktown. So they're all within, you know, easy driving distance. So if you spent a day and a half in there, and maybe 3 days, a couple of nights would be a good time. If I was coming now, I'd probably spend at least a long weekend here.
And we're talking with Peter Armstrong. I'm sorry. Go ahead, Peter.
I'm saying then we're not even talking about things like the Busch Gardens and the water parks and all the things that are also around here.
Oh, we'll get to that. We're talking with Peter Armstrong of the Jamestown Yorktown Foundation. Peter, do most visitors come by car, plane, or train? And what are your peak and bargain seasons?
Okay, well, I think most people probably come by car. We're in America, so the train isn't that as useful as it possibly is in England. There is a couple of plane people that come into Richmond, but I think most people arrive by car because of the easy transport between the different historic sites. There's a parkway that was built that takes you, so you can arrive at Jamestown, go around Jamestown 1607, get on that parkway, travel to Colonial Williamsburg, see as America looked in the late 18th century, and then travel to Yorktown and see the Battle of Yorktown in the 19th century. So you've really got a good opportunity to see all the history by that one road. And like anything else, you know, the peak periods are the summer periods, although at the moment we have a lot of school visitors. Jamestown and Yorktown Foundation are really pride themselves on our educational resource. So we have a lot of schools in at the moment. And then, of course, the January, February, December time is our quieter period.
Well, where should visitors stay? Because I know there's so much going on, but where do they stay?
Well, because there's so much going on, there's so many places to stay. And from your kind of, you know, your bargain hotels right up to the Colonial Williamsburg Hotel, which is probably the one where the Queen stayed in. So you can take a variety of where you'd want to stay. But there are parks and there are kind of RV parks and there's everything you can imagine. Because, you know, we welcome millions and millions of visitors here to the Historic Triangle every year. So there's places to stay easily, for easy reach for everybody's pocket, really.
Yeah, I was going to say that's definitely something to keep in mind. But
yeah,
the other thing is we love to eat. So can they find some colonial favorites like peanut soup and other things?
Of course you can. Of course. We've served peanut soup in both our restaurants. So you can get that there in the restaurants in both of our museums. But, yes, there's lots of eateries. From those kind of things that you'd be familiar with in your own high streets down to real specialist ones. And a lot of the restaurants here specialize in creating foods from the period. In fact, we just had Twiddy, the chef in our museum, cooking some real colonial food from the period. So we specialize in that. And if you've got one to come here during Thanksgiving, then both of our museums prepare food in the traditional ways of the 17th and 18th century. So you can see that all being prepared, and you can sample all of that. Thanksgiving is a real foodie time here in the Historic Triangle.
You know, speaking of favorites, coastal Virginia is one of the most scenic spots in the United States. What other attractions are in the area? You mentioned Busch Gardens before. What else is around?
Yeah, so there's a Busch Gardens. So there's a Busch Gardens theme park, and there's and actually, what makes it, I think, Busch Gardens theme park stand out is it's every year wins the most beautiful theme park in America. It's really a beautiful place to visit, not just for the rides, but for the place itself. And then there's a, it has a water park next to it called, and that's owned by the same company. And then there is, as you can imagine, again, 4 or 5 million visitors a year. There's lots of attractions, shops that people can go and visit if they require as well. And that, there's even a Ripley's, believe it or not, in Williamsburg. But if you get in the car and want to drive to the beach, that's about an hour's drive away into Virginia Beach. And like you say, there's some beautiful parts of the country. You can get well away into some very quiet areas. And then what I love about Virginia is, and where we live now, is I can drive to the beach, turn around and drive into the mountains. So it's a great place to live.
Is the reconstruction of 64 done yet, or is that still an issue?
It's still being done, and there's part of it that might take you some time. So I wouldn't lie to you. I would say you need to check up on your apps or your radio before you take out on some of those days. Some days you can go straight through. Other days it might take you a little bit longer.
Okay. Dan?
Well, I'm glad you mentioned that because one of my favorite apps is Waze, W-A-Z-E.
Yeah, I use that.
And
yeah.
it tells you if there's a rock on the road, if there's police activity, if there's an accident, whatever's going on, it knows. And I have a woman's voice on my Waze, so I named it Millie because I figured Millie Waze was the opposite of Willie Mays.
Okay.
The 64, there is a little insider tip for you. Alongside the 64 runs the 60 and the 143, and they go in the same direction, and I just use those.
Okay.
Ah, that's a good way. Good
I'll
thing
remember
to know.
That.
Yeah, remember
yeah.
143.
I will too.
Yeah.
And I want to tell our listeners, you're listening to Travel Itch Radio with Dan Schlossberg and Maggie Linton. Find the archive show on blogtalkradio.com or check out Travel Itch Radio on Facebook. We're also on iTunes. And we're talking with Peter Armstrong of the Jamestown Yorktown Foundation. Maggie?
All right. Well, Peter, Travel Itch listeners always love to learn about our guests. You gave us a little hint, so please tell us about where you were born, raised, educated, how you got into the business world, and you gave us a little hint about how you wound up at the Georgetown Yorktown Foundation, but we'd love to know more.
Well, as you can tell, I was born in Britain and brought up in Britain. I've only been here 4 years, and my wife and I have just got our green card, so we tend to be here for a little bit longer, but... My original background is nothing to do with history. So my original background is in theatre. So I worked a lot in theatres. But what I do is kind of create stories for people. So when you come to visit the museums, I try to make them as entertaining and as educational as possible. So sometimes that means an object in a case, and sometimes that means a person in a costume talking to you. So my role really is to make it both fun and educational. So my background is really theatre and shows, and I was born and raised, as I say, in England and educated in England. And I used to be the director of some weird things. So I used to be the director of the London Dungeons in London, the place that tries to scare you. I used to be director of an aquarium. But before I came here, I was in charge of the Tower of London in London. So that's where my background comes from.
Wow. All right.
Were you incarcerated in the Tower of London?
Actually, sometimes, and that was the best part of it. Because we were very lucky, we had what they call the White Tower, which was the very oldest part where all the Henry VIII's armors kept. And because of that, there was a small flat put aside inside the Tower of London, a full apartment. And I was able to stay in that apartment some nights. So that was always cool to go back to the Tower of London and sort of get, you know, let in by the beefeater and go to my apartment in the Tower of London walls. So that was always cool.
That does
That's
sound
terrific.
Cool.
Yeah,
you mentioned your theater background too, and that's got to be so important because there are so many reenactors part of the colonial Williamsburg and Jamestown, New Yorktown.
Sure, that's right. But I think, you know, history, when people want to learn about history, it's a story, you know, it's called a story, and there's a story word in there. And any story that you want to tell, you know, how can you embellish that story to make it exciting and interesting? How can you, you know, that ranges from, you know, some of those documentaries you watch on the TV to a guy that's doing a great academic lecture. It's just telling a story in the way that the audience want to hear it. It's what you guys do for a living. So that's what I try to do. I try to say, okay, I got a story about John Smith and Pocahontas. How can I tell that story in a way that engages 8-year-olds? And maybe next week I'm telling a story that engages 20-year-olds. So it's telling stories, and that's where the theater background really comes in and helps.
Yeah, and finding the right people for the right part, too.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, we mean, and then we've got a lot of people down here that are performers. We at Jamestown Yorktown Foundation don't do reenacting in the, what we call the first person. So we don't pretend to be from the period. We don't pretend to be John Smith or pretend to be, you know, an American soldier. We tend to, we do the third person. So when you approach us, we'll know that we're not from that period, and we'll talk to you knowing that you, you know, want to hear about what our costume is, what our clothing is like, and what and how a fire was made, etc. But we'll talk to you in that way rather than pretend to be someone. When in Colonial Williamsburg, they sort of do the same thing, but they also have people who are playing the part of the Marquis de Lafayette or George Washington.
Well, what can I Dan?
Yeah, where can our listeners learn more about Jamestown and Yorktown, Peter?
Well, obviously you can learn that on the website, like everybody has, but our website's got a really cool name. It's called History is Fun. So if you look at historyisfun.org, then that'll give you a lot of details about what we've got coming up. And actually, you need to look at that now because 2019 is a huge year for the Jamestown-Yorktown Foundation and Virginia as a whole. So you talked about the 400th anniversary in 2007. Well, 2019, next year, is the 400th anniversary of the arrival of the first Africans, the arrival of the first colony of women from England, the first time that a legislative government was put together, the first time the government that you now have in America was formed, and the first Thanksgiving down in Berkeley's Plantation. So four major celebrations going on in 2019 right across Virginia, and we're a major part of that. So if you are thinking of visiting, 2019 is a great year to visit.
No,
go over those four again. You said the first women, the first Africans, the first Thanksgiving,
so the first
and I missed one.
Yeah, the first Africans were brought across as slaves in 1619. The colony in Jamestown realized that it was never going to be a colony if it was just men. So ships of women were sent across in 1619. And then the first, what we call the legislative government, so the first time groups got together and decided what laws they were going to have in this area, and that government is called the Burgees, and still in Virginia, the government's called the Burgees. And it's also the first Thanksgiving, which took place down in Berkeley Plantation, about 25 miles from here.
Amazing. Well, is there anything else we haven't asked that you'd like to add?
Well, that's just what I wanted to add about 1619. We are putting on an exhibition here, which opens in November of this year, but runs for the whole of 2019. You'll like this. It's called Tenacity, and it's all about the first women in Virginia, both the English arriving here, the Indians that were already here, and the Africans that were brought against their will. So the women in Jamestown in Virginia, those women that, through their own tenacity and will, survived, and just being able to live was a pretty impressive thing. But to be a woman in a man's world and to be able to survive and do all that they did is a great story. And unfortunately, because they were women, the story wasn't really recorded. So we're bringing their names back to life and talking about them and telling people about those real tenacious women in 1619.
But Captain
and
John Smith
so
took an Indian woman, right?
Yeah, well, you know, I think the thing between Indian women and English men was there's a mix, you know, men are men and women are women. And to be honest, when it first arrived, the relationship between the men and the women and the Indians and the English was far more, you know, you see on the TV and you hear about things about all the different Powhatan War that went on, but really the relationship between the two cultures was very much mixed from the very, very, very earliest days.
Because they needed each other.
Exactly, exactly. And trading had gone on in this area for a long time. What you have to remember is that the Jamestown settlement was exactly that. It was the first colony. Now, trading with the Indians had gone on for a long time, from the English and the Dutch and the Spanish, but nobody had really set up a colony and said, we're here to stay. And that's what Jamestown is. It's the arrival of the English saying, we're going to set a colony up, we're going to send women, we're going to have children, we're going to have a colony here, and we're going to live in America. Most of the other things were just trading posts. We'll be here for a few years, and then we'll go back to England. So if you're going to set a colony up and live here forever, you better get on with your neighbors.
Yeah.
So it's really a great place to go if you want to see the first English settlement and also what eventually happened more than a century later with the Revolutionary War.
Yes, that's the point. First time, I like to say it's the area where the English first came and then the area where the English got kicked out.
Well, that's another whole story, isn't it?
Yeah, so there's also, of course, we could talk about the Yorktown and the American Revolution and that surrender in 1781, which really was the end of the American Revolution and the start of the America that you know today.
Yeah,
it's a great
Fair to say that any age can enjoy what you have in Jamestown, Yorktown?
Well, we tried to develop it for that very reason. So with Yorktown in particular, I said to myself, I was helping design and develop Yorktown, why would an African-American 14-year-old girl be interested in this museum? And if I can make it so that she would be, then I think we've got a success. How do we make it so that everybody's having a good time, regardless of their interest or level or or background? How do we ensure that? And the American Revolution is a revolution that covers everybody in America, and that means every class, every creed, every color, every religion. So we want to make sure our museum told that story. That what we like to say, it's about the ordinary people in extraordinary times.
Oh, that's really
and how
well
they
done.
All survived
how
and they made
survived,
America.
How they lived and how they formed a new country. I mean, the American Revolution is an amazing revolution. You try to think of another revolution that didn't end in bloodshed. So the American Revolution finishes, and unlike the French Revolution or the Russian Revolution, there are not thousands and thousands of people slaughtered. They were able to form a country, form a civilization, and get a government going, get a bank going, and getting the finances right and the trading, which most of the revolutions just ended in chaos. So it's a really fascinating story.
It really is.
Well, since you are from England and since you live in such a beautiful place in coastal Virginia, where do you go when you go on vacation?
Well, in about a week's time, I'm going back to England. But that's because my son is graduating.
Congratulations.
I'm watching him, going back to see him graduate and spend some time in England. But most of the time, we do what every English person would get in the car and go on a road trip. So we're trying to do as many of these road trips as we possibly can because we're getting used to the distances. You know, when I first came to America, people said to me the difference between the English and the Americans is that the Americans think that 100 years is a long time ago and the English think 100 miles is a long way to travel.
Very true. Yeah, it's so quick to get around Europe. You can go from one country to another, and from here you'd be going through one state.
Yeah, exactly. Well, Virginia is the same size as Britain. If I drive from the edge of Virginia to from the mountains in the Shenandoah to the coastal plains in Virginia, I've traveled about the same length as Britain. So it's about the same size. So we've just got to – it's difficult sometimes for us to get our heads around that. But, of course, the other difference is in Britain, the train and the European train system is so great. So any of your listeners that want to go traveling, I'd advise them to get the train when you're in Europe.
Very true.
Okay. Unfortunately, Peter, we're out of time, so I want to tell our listeners our special guest tonight has been Peter Armstrong, Senior Director of Museum Operations and Education at Jamestown Yorktown Foundation. Thanks, Peter, for joining Travelitch Radio.
Well, thank you very much for inviting me, and I hope to welcome some of your listeners here into Jamestown and Yorktown.
Definitely.
Thank you. Well, it's not too early to start thinking about gifts for Mother's Day, Father's Day, graduations, bar mitzvahs, summer birthdays. So for the baseball fans in the audience, please consider my books, When the Braves Ruled the Diamond, 14 Flags Over Atlanta, or The New Baseball Bible, both from Sports Publishing. Check them out on Amazon.com or in the sports sections of major booksellers. And that's it for this edition of Travelitch Radio. Next week, same time, same station, our guest will be Jessica O'Reilly, Communications Manager for Travel Iowa. Now, this is Dan Schlossberg along with Maggie Linton saying thank you for your time this time. Until next time, good night.
Well, I'm a traveling man.